yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So this is obviously the All-Ireland Club Final preview show, Les, but we're going to start with our friend Joe Brawley, who's agreed to talk to Ayr. And this is a quote from him. He says, "Well, you know, there you are then. I'm a hypocrite." So it's fairly obvious he is kind of being a hypocrite here, Conan. Conan and Connor are here, obviously, with me.
Yeah, he definitely is. Like, it's just whether or not you care about it. Obviously, he's got a lot of principles and he's been very, very, very strong on this.
Very strong on principles and the GEA's principles.
And the GEA ethos.
Yeah. And he's tweeted and he's deleted the tweet since, and he said, that's why I would never work for Sky or Ayr.
Yeah, which then that tweet ended with something like, you know, we're the GEA, what else do we have? Like, you know, if you sell your principles, basically. But Joe doesn't seem to care. And like, he never seems to care about being a hypocrite either. Like, you know, you always told the story where he just said, "You're taking this thing too seriously, Parky."
That's his out.
So he's out this time. He's just like, "Yeah, I'm a hypocrite. Let's move on. I'll tell you a story."
Yeah, well, opinions are one thing. Like, Joel's opinions change like the wind, you know, but like, principles are another thing. And this has been Brawley's cause celeb for the last few years. This has commanded more column inches, or, you know, he's spoken about this more than anything. And like, I know it's, I don't want to be too critical either, but it's a fair climb down, you know.
It's a massive climb down. And it's more revenge on RTE. It's to go up yours, I'm wanted, somebody wants me. And he talked about being hurt by RTE, and I completely understand that he absolutely would be hurt. He was kind of dropped unceremoniously, if we're being honest, after 20 years. And he had some brilliant moments with RTE. And when I was reading that, him saying that he was hurt, and he was being very honest about that, because he could have gone, look, you know, I'm Joe Brawley, it's water off a duck's back. But he was honest about it. Because I remember when I left Off the Ball, and I chose to leave Off the Ball. I came to work here and, you know, decided I want to leave. I didn't like it anymore. And they were going on a trip to the Euros. So I gave my month's notice, not even thinking for a second that this would have compromised my month's notice in Fra at the Euros. And then I got told I'm putting on gardening leave and I'm not getting that. And I was out the door. I was told I could come in and collect my stuff from my desk. And I was like, what a wankery way to treat somebody after, you know, working, doing good work for them for 3 years, coming in at a time when things were very difficult for them. Anyways, I don't want to go on about that situation, but I'm looking at Joe Brawley, 20 years of some brilliant moments, and now he's just out the door. You know, not a thank you, not a night out with the staff, not a, you know, as he said yesterday, I think they get a clock when they retire.
Yeah.
I can see why he would have been hurt.
Yeah, like, he gave them a lot of service, you're right, and like, it was very good for them as well. Like, the bottom line is, Joe Brawley's good. Like, you know, he's a bit of a prat and he lost his way a bit over the last few years, and, you know, his principles will change all the time, but you'd still rather watch Joe Brawley than a lot of people. Like, you know, he still had that sort of pull. And yeah, it's weird that they, like, you know, fair enough, they wanted to make a statement, or, you know, it was difficult and they wanted to sort of maybe clamp down on him a little bit.
Yeah.
They just got rid of him. They didn't demote him, or just gone.
I think his ego had gotten too big, in that he thought it was more about him and he tried to be more entertaining. And like, I mean, there is, we talk about this all the time, there's a balance between analysis and being entertaining. I think he can mix both of them together easily. But to be honest, he's talked about what Ayr said to them, and they've guaranteed him free speech. They said, "We guarantee you free speech. You do what you do. There'll be no editorial intrusion. You'll be totally independent. You'll be able to speak your mind." And I was just thinking, God help whoever's on with him. Like, what are they going to do? Like, pray for anyone that's on with him. Go do what you want, Joe.
Yeah.
Like, the first game is Kerry Dublin. Now, no one's going to watch it on Ayr because it's on RTE at the same time. And obviously, RTE is free to air. But like, I mean, we should open up a book on whether Joe goes on a big rant about Dublin's charity work at halftime or that. Cause
yeah.
Like, I mean, it's dangerous to say to Joe, there's free rein, because like, he just bullshits. Like, I mean, I think Joe, your reins need to be pulled in on a little bit, and maybe that's the presenter's job.
It's going to be tough for the presenter, and it's going to be worse for the person sitting beside him. He's not going to get a word in edgeways.
You're going to have a lot of people tweeting Joe Brawley the viewing figures between Ayr and RTE after the first day. That was Joe Brawley's favourite.
Oh, he loved doing that with Sky, didn't it? And with, like, I mean, geez, can we get our hands on them? Because I would love that. That would be funny, wouldn't it?
That'd be good.
Who watched on Ayr?
But it'd be better coming from you, Willie, to be honest.
But it'll be be good for him for social media. So he might latch on the social media numbers now and start talking about that.
Well, that's the thing. He talked about his children, and we'll move off this now because I know you probably want to talk about the matches. He said he was talking about his children. He says, "I see my own kids' viewing habits. They don't even watch TV now. Everything is streamed on tablets or whatever." And he talked about the average age of a BBC viewer being 61. And that's all right. We understand that. Everything's moving online with the younger people, YouTube. But that's trying to soften his blow from leaving RTE or an exclusive game on RTE. Those rules don't apply. The whole country's watching that. Yeah. And there's no getting away from that unless the next deal starts spreading it around. You know what I mean? Which I think the GAA have to move with the times and stop giving so much exclusivity to RTE. But the reality is all those rules and the children, I bet his children who watch YouTube and tablets and all, they still watch a match on RTE because there's nowhere else to watch it.
And yeah, you're going to watch this Dublin Kerry match on RTE. You're, like, Joe Brawley's a good name, but you're not going to go out of your way to go get him. Like, if he's on, great, but like, you're going to still watch RTE.
I'm terrible for that. I'm still, but like, I go to a match and if it's not on RTE, I think it's not on the television.
Yeah.
And it could be, like, even if it was a rugby match maybe, and it's actually on Sky and I've just wrote it off because
sent out a tweet about it.
Yeah, it's not even on telly and it's on. But like, the way with a lot of the pay-per-view channels now, geez, we're going off the subject. It's gone so bad now that if it's not on RT or BBC, it might not be on Sky, it might not be on BT, and it's on First Bloody Row or whatever. What's the other one? The other one that's tenner a month for
Premier
Sports. Sure, where are you meant to know where a match is on now? It's spread out everywhere. But anyways,
First Row's a dodgy streaming site.
First Row's right, so I was in Croke Park on Tuesday. It was the media day for the All-Ireland Club Finals, and I spoke with Liam Silk, so have a listen to that.
Welcome to the GAA, Liam. How is the excitement building in Carrafin? This is a three in a row, potential three in a row has never been done.
Yeah, look, it's best off trying not to think about it, I suppose. People in the media are going to be mentioning a lot, but we're just looking ahead to 60 minutes, really. It's just we need to focus on this one game and try not to think too far ahead or think too much outside of the picture.
Yeah, no, I understand that that's definitely the way as a team you will be thinking of it. But when you're driving in the car and you're going home to train, and is it difficult not for your mind not to wonder and think, Jesus, no club has ever done what we could do?
No, I've definitely been trying not to think like that. Yeah.
But is it hard to push that away, or can it sink in a little bit?
Look, if it happens, that's when I suppose you'll think about it and let it sink in. But for the moment, two in a row has been done before by two teams, so we're not standing out as anything just yet. So I think we need to just focus on the one game, and that then if we do it, that's when we can start thinking about it properly.
Yeah, no, true. How do you motivate yourselves to come back year after year? So we know the domination in Galway, even though it's been getting harder to win them. Don't know, are the other teams catching up with you, or is it difficult to stay motivated every year?
Not really. I think if you look back to the last two county titles that we won, they both went to replays. So we're definitely still motivated. You can just see how much players are dying on the pitch really for the team. So I don't think it's hard to stay motivated, because once you get that taste for success, you just want it more and more, I suppose, and success just breeds success, and you can really see that has happened. And I think all the players realise that it's not going to last forever, so we're really just making the most of it while we can.
Before the Nemo game in the semi-final, I'm sure you knew, after hammering them in the final, that these are going to come hard at us. Every team is coming hard at you now, because you're the top club in the country. So I suppose your team meetings are, lads, we have to match them for that.
Yeah, look, I think we had been in a very similar situation when we played Dr. Crokes in the All-Ireland final, because they had given us a hammer in a year or two before that. So we knew exactly how Nemo were going to be feeling. And I think in that game, especially, we got that early goal, it would really have set them back. So yeah, look, every team is going to be gunning for us. Everyone wants to take us down, and we just have to be ready for that and be able to give it back as good as we get.
Yeah, because we know the class that you have. That's this one we've eulogised about your team because it's brilliant, but it looked like Nemo against Nemo, like you were the team out for revenge and not them. Like, you must be very proud of the likes of that.
Yeah, look, around the middle of the field, players were just dying for breaks and diving in, and like, I was back in the full back line just in awe, I suppose, at all of it, because just the sheer will to win every ball out there. Yeah. It was amazing, really.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I suppose, as far as we've come to still have that hunger and have that drive.
Yeah, no, it was incredible to watch it. It was like, Jesus, I thought Nemo were the team going to be out for revenge here. So you talked about being back in corner back. You don't spend too long back there.
I'd rather not be there.
Poor Luke Connolly was like, his head was wrecked trying to follow you because like you were taken off. You were given the man-marking job on him, but like, is part of man-marking now throwing the full forward off his game by heading on up the field?
Look, as any forward will say, I'm sure you'll agree, the last thing you want to do is to be running back after the player. But I think with Kerfin, it helps me a lot more, I suppose, that we're such a strong team that we're able to dominate possession, and obviously that makes it a lot easier. Whereas if they had all the ball and they were kicking it all in, it'd be completely different. I'd be the one running around.
It's funny because it's always the case with halfbacks. When your midfielder are winning the midfield battle and you've such a strong midfield, you can take off when you want. Yeah. And now half forwards work really hard. So maybe you're being clever and saying, I'll go back in the corner where they don't work. They don't work as hard.
I don't know. It's just about the players you have around you, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it would easily translate to the intercounty game where there's going to be strong players everywhere. It wouldn't be as easy to be getting forward like that from a cornerback position. So, yeah, it's just really about, I suppose, in Kieran Fitzgerald as well, we have an anchor at the back there who's always going to hold the fort. And
he took off a few times against Nemo too,
well,
didn't he?
Yeah, he must be trying to change up his game plan as well. But yeah, look, it's all about the players around you, I think, that makes it that bit easier.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, some of the goals, you scored 5-5 in the Championship, and some of your finishes are forwards finishes. Did you play in the forwards at any time, or do you work on your finishing? Because, like, I mean, they're not goals that you would associate. Some are smashed high, some are placed low. Like, they're almost like goals that a forward would score.
I'm not sure.
And you take penalties.
I would have previously, in, like, let's say seasons gone by, I would have gotten goal chances and I wouldn't have taken them. So it has been something I've worked on.
Really?
Because I used to get in those positions a lot, so definitely has been something I worked on, but I still wouldn't have expected to get that sort of return, and I'm sure it won't ever happen to get that many again. It's just been a good year so far. I've been lucky to get into positions where it's happened.
Right, so when you work on scoring goals, is that in training with the goalkeeper and staying back afterwards, or just...?
Sometimes, yeah. Also, like, I'm up in UCD a lot of the time where there wouldn't be that many players around, so I could just go out a few balls by myself and practice it. But yeah, I suppose you just need to, definitely takes practice, but I'm not sure I've done as much to reap the reward that I've gotten so far. I think it's just been a lucky year so far.
Right, okay. So is there any trick to ghosting in behind like you do, not being picked up? Do you go into midfield, get lost amongst the group of players and just kind of sneak on up?
Yeah, definitely if you're coming from a cornerback position, it makes it easier, I suppose. If you're just sneaking out there, like the wing forwards will be tracking the players, the corner forward might have gone out just around the middle and they're not really thinking about you as a player, but
they switch off, or maybe a half forward might not switch off.
Yeah, switch off for a second and just get a lucky run off a player and you're not tracked. But I suppose after having scored 2 goals in the Connacht Championship, then I'm going to be tracked in the future. Yeah. So it makes it harder to keep it going.
He did his best, Luke Connolly, to track you every time, even though, like, from Nemo's point of view, I don't know why they would want him tracking you all the time. Do you know? Like, I mean,
yeah, I think they were trying to switch to get the wing forward or someone further out to track me, but in the middle of a game where there's players running everywhere, it's not always that easy.
Yeah, no, it's not. What was the man-marking job on Luke Connolly? Do you enjoy the actual marking part as well? Because when you first came to my attention, you man-marked Dermot Connolly, did brilliantly on him in Tullamore. Like, do you like the man-marking part of it, or do you dislike cornerback?
I do dislike cornerback, but look, I don't think...
I'm glad you're honest.
Yeah. Look, it's just about going out and doing the best for the team. And there is a certain satisfaction if you're marking a big player like that and you're helping the team and keeping his scores down.
Yeah.
You definitely get a satisfaction out of it, but...
Because it's not like you're not able. You're well able to get in and get the fit, like, prop, you know, traditional cornerback play, for example.
Yeah, look, I've always been a back coming up through the years. I think there was 1 year with Jarlitz, I was playing centre forward, but that didn't last too long.
That's the goals thing there now. So where do you like playing then? Where's your...
Wing back would be.
Wing back.
Yeah, look, that's an ideal position for getting forward these days.
Right.
I think if you ask a lot of wing forwards in this modern age, they do more tracking back and the wing back does more bombing forward, so it's almost role reversal nearly. So yeah, I think wing back is the ideal position for getting forward.
Right, okay. I just saw Pádraig Joyce's first team for Galway, not to take it off the club, but he picked Johnny Heaney, cornerback. He picked Brannigan, one wing back, and McDade, the other wing back. So he likes attacking backs, which is good news.
Pretty obvious what style of football he's going for there. But yeah, look, I think what he's trying to do is to have good footballers in every position and to be able to attack from everywhere. So that's it's a very good style of play to want to be going into. And
yeah.
But you just can't neglect the defensive side of things too much either. You still need to have good defenders there.
Obviously not. Come here, you went travelling in 2018. Do you think you're benefiting from that now? Do you think that's important for players to do, just to take a break, especially the way year rolls on and on with being with a successful club?
Yeah, like a lot of the Girvan players would have gone to America or whatever for a few weeks in the summer. So it definitely helps to get that break. Like when you think about it, the club player, their time for a break is in the summer, really, because all the Intercounty Championship is going on. So, yeah, it definitely helps to just take a few weeks away and go experience something different.
And then you come back, you haven't really missed anything because the club takes a break for the summer.
Yeah, look, it's ideal, really, that they can have the best of both worlds like that. But, it's worked out very well for us having a few players go abroad to America. They still get lots of football into them and still come back hungry to get their Curfin jersey back.
Exactly. Camira, I wanted to ask you, because we know you're studying medicine in UCD, and there's a lot of talk about this ERSI report, and 31 hours apparently is the average intercounty players spend preparing and training and travelling and everything like that. Like, how do you balance the study that's involved in studying medicine with all that? Because I'm sure when you travel back to Corfin or back for Galway, like, you're losing maybe from 4 o'clock in the day until 12 or 1 that night.
Yeah, I think it's key to get that balance. There wouldn't be, I suppose there isn't that many players doing that much travelling as me. And I think it's very important that I wouldn't go back midweek every week for training, because obviously like half the day would be gone. And then on the Fridays, half the day is gone again as well. And then Sunday's travelling back up. So I think it's up to each player for their own individual situation to try and manage it the best they can. But it's also, you need the managers to buy in to see the player welfare point of view and what's best for them as well, so they're not putting too much pressure on you. And thankfully, I've had understanding managers for the past 2.5 years while I've been in Dublin. They've been very eager to make sure that I balance everything properly and get the best out of both the study and the football side of things.
Okay, because like the Mayo fellas in Dublin were saying they go on like Skype calls and check into team meetings, you know, during the championship when you have to...
A lot of them train up in Dublin as well.
Because like, it would be out of the question for you to travel home during the week with the workload you would have studying, I'd imagine.
Yeah, look, it all depends on the time of year as well. Like if I have exams coming up, obviously I need to dedicate a lot more time to studying then. But thankfully, at the moment, I'm only back a week or two, so I'm able to prioritise the football at the moment. But yeah, again, it's each individual player's own situation. And obviously, if there's more players up in Dublin, you could get together during the week to make things that bit easier. I think Mayo have done that very well, and I think Donegal have done it in the past as well.
Yeah, exactly. Camira, just finally, what is it about All-Ireland Finals that seems to bring out the best in you here in Croke Park? The pitch?
I think that definitely helps. I think... After the first one, all the players, they just feel confident when they come out here. But it's been a combination of us performing very well and the teams we've been playing. They definitely wouldn't have been happy with their performance.
Yeah, but it can't be a coincidence that it's happened 3 good teams.
Well, we'll have to see what Kilcoo brings to the table. I'm sure they won't let it happen. So, I don't know what it is. It's just performing our best on the day and being ready for the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Did you get to watch Kilcoo after the Nemo game, or were you in transit?
We saw the second half. We were watching it while we were eating food. Look, they're a very impressive team. I'm sure you'll agree. They've seemed to have gotten better as they've gone on in the championship, become more of a team and become more convinced in their ethos and how they're playing. So they're just very fast, fit, skillful players, and they're just set up to take us down, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Just to finish up, Kilcoo, obviously, you're a tiny little village. A lot of them are sheep farmers, which we've heard from them. I remember Slocknail before they played Geez, this little village versus Corfin. You're a little village as well, but that kind of narrative doesn't follow Corfin at all.
We've big enough parish. There would be, it's kind of Belclare and Corfin, they're two parishes brought together. So I'm not sure we can play off that saying... Actually, Curfin, the village itself is very small, but the players are coming from all around, so
okay.
I don't think we can make the same claim.
Right, okay. Well, you've got your 3 in a row as motivation. They have the little village community spirit.
Yeah, if you want to put it like that.
Listen, Liam, thanks very much.
Great stuff from Liam there. One thing I did love him saying, and I really appreciate this because I would have said the same thing back in the day in the early noughties, I do dislike cornerback. Interesting. At least he didn't say, well, look, I'll play anywhere for the team once I'm getting picked and have a jersey on my back. That's the main thing. No, he doesn't like it. Even though he looks like he's made it look enjoyable.
He's a kindred spirit of mine. I've been saying that to my club mate and my management for years to little effect. But he seems to, you can be good at a position without having to admit that you like it. Do you know what I mean? And Liam Silk is far from the only person who would say that they don't like cornerback, as me and you can testify with it.
It's too good of a footballer to like it. Like, that position's for, is it Owen O'Donoghue from Mayo who said he likes ruining people's happiness?
Oh yeah.
That's a cornerback position.
That was a great line.
That was a great line.
He's well able to get up forward and kick points as well. But he does like that element of it.
He looks like a fish out of water. Liam Silk looks like he's made to be running off that field. Donoghue looks like a certain cornerbacks just look like an attacking cornerback. Liam Silk looks like a graceful kind of a wing back playing cornerback, and that's probably it. But like, I mean, I know we've analysed this, lads, and I'm so interested in this whole area of attacking cornerbacks, because you know the way he finds himself in positions where he's just not being marked, and then he runs to midfield and might get lost in the crowd, and the corner forward switches off and suddenly he's free. Another situation that could happen is he goes out in there and the corner forward tries to pawn him off to another player, and in between the switch Liam Silk is left free. So like, I mean, it's just so difficult. We know Dublin just tell their corner forwards, follow him. We know we kind of go, surely there's another way of doing this, and we say pawn him off. And you know, we know maybe the dangers now of pawning him, you know what I mean, pawning him off. And is it that easy? Liam said it's not always easy where players are running everywhere around the middle and you're trying to pawn someone off. That's not easy, and especially against Cara Finn, because I'm telling you, every man has to worry about his man at Cara Finn. Do you know, you can't can you pawn off somebody to pick up Silk and leave, I don't know. Gary Sice or somebody like that free?
That's the beauty. Like, they have six forwards who you can't, and Kieran Malloy, and you can't just leave any of them. Like, most club teams will have two scorers, so you panic when they have the ball, but when the others have it, you don't need to be putting on as high a press.
Yeah.
But you can't do that with the six Cara Finn forwards. Like, you know, and here's
the
Yeah,
it's not even their forwards. Like, I mean, it's usually a wing forward that will pick up your man, but they're worried about Malloy. Do you know what I mean? Or Dylan Wall or whoever's on the other wing. You know what I mean? It's not easy to do that.
Yeah, but Liam Silk is doing that as well while being handed one of the toughest man marking gigs. You know, he got Luke Connolly against Nemo, I think. He gets it for Galway as well. He gets really tough man marking gigs that you would expect him to be, you know, occupy his whole timer for the whole game, whatever, and yet he still manages to ghost into these positions. So what do you do? Do you like do a kind of a Mayo on Jack McCarthy last year and admit that like this guy is going to be so much of a threat going forward that we have to be conscious of whoever's marking him has to just be tracking him full time rather than take the risk that you put a corner forward there who will let him wander off into the other half of the pitch and get scores?
But this is the thing, this is the dynamic. Liam Silk decides who he marks. A forward doesn't decide who he marks. So Liam Silk can say at the weekend, right, so Kilcoo are not going to want him marking Laverty because Laverty's the first one out and he throws it around. Liam Silk marks Laverty, what did he do? Stick another forward on him. Now Liam Silk's marking two men and two of their forwards are messed up. See, backs dictate who marks.
Yeah. So Silk, Lark Corbett tried to remember Lark Corbett tried to mark Tommy Wells.
You're ending up with a poxy situation like that. So I would imagine Silk is going to go straight on to Conor Laverty, and Conor Laverty's going to have a horrible afternoon following him.
Yeah, but like,
discuss.
You said it there about Luke Connolly. Like, he shouldn't be tracking Liam Silk, even if Liam Silk's marking him. So he should be said, you do not come back beyond the 45 because we need you scoring.
Yeah.
But then, so what do they do then?
Yeah. See, who picks up Liam Silk when he comes forward then? Because neither the two midfielders can, because Steed and Dahi Burke, like, unless Dahi Burke's hanging back and there's a midfielder. But you can't guarantee that.
Yeah.
So you can't guarantee one person against Cara Finn to always do it.
But he's too good to say, oh, somebody pick him up. You know, somebody in the back line or somebody in midfield pick him up as he goes.
I'm not saying I'm right in any of this. I'm just saying this is a very difficult dynamic to get right. And I'd imagine teams around the country are tearing their hairs out and having team meetings and going, what do we do in these situations?
Like, that's definitely right. But Connor's saying he's too good to not pick up or not worry about. But like, Conor Laverty, I think, is too important for the way Kilcoo
played.
So he has to stay there. And then whether it's two players don't come back or three, there's 11 or 12 men, outfielders, who are defending. And then, like, it should be enough.
So you'll have Ryan Johnson say, right, you pick him up. Now Kieran Malloy's free. So I'm sure Kieran Malloy's going to make a nuisance of himself the minute that happens. Do you know? And Cara Finn moved the ball so fast up the field, through the foot. There's not that many spare men. It's not like, it's easy against a defensive team who are dropping off. You know what I mean? Dropping off, and then there's spare men all over the field. Cara Finn generally won't do that. They'll move the ball up really fast. They'll try and get the one-on-ones. I'm just saying, against a team like Cara Finn, you know, it's not that, I don't think it's that easy. It's not as easy as just say follow him or say don't follow him. Do you know? I'm sure it's very difficult.
I was about to say if it's Cara Finlay, probably. I think you mentioned one of the midfielders, and then I have a vision in my head of Dahi Burke being, you know, having two or three goal chances in the All Ireland Club Final last year.
Because, I think he got 2 points. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and like really close, like a lot closer to goal than he was usually. Probably because, you know, somebody said, "Oh well, Dahi Burke will hold back," so then they let him free, and then he goes and he nearly scores 2 goals.
When, like, when your philosophy is attack. Right? Your philosophy of your team is attack. Dahi Burke will go, "I'm free. I see what's happening here. I'm going to go forward." If that's your philosophy, if your philosophy is to defend, Dahi Burke will go, "Geez, I better not go forward now. I'm the last man back." Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it depends on what your philosophy is. That's why I think it's so hard against Cara Finn, because every man is going to have to be worried about someone.
Yeah. So what would you do? Because I would definitely be saying to Conor Laverty, don't you bloody leave the full forward line.
Yeah, I would be the same. But you have to be very quick on the draw there. If whoever's told to pick up Laverty, if his man starts causing problems, now you're in problem. You know what I mean? You nearly have to have another fella doing it the next time before their men start figuring out this is a tactic, I'm free, or the other sideline starts saying, make a nuisance of yourself, you're free. Do you know what I mean? It's not an easy thing.
It's definitely,
you know,
not.
It's definitely not.
I had Kieran Fitzgerald on Conor Lafferty, but now you've kind of convinced me that it's going to be Liam Self.
Well, I think what forward would Cara Finn like to mess, whose game would they like to mess up? Jerome Johnson's not playing brilliantly. On that full forward line, it's Laverty. Laverty makes
because
them
of his importance to their overall game plan. Yes, yeah, I would say so.
Yeah,
but then I wouldn't rule out Jerome Johnson. I mean, like, I know he hasn't been great, but this is a like county standard footballer who could potentially turn it on the day, especially in Croke Park as well.
True. I think Kieran Fitzgerald, funnily enough, will mark him because it was Silk on Connolly the last time, and Fitzgerald picked up the corner forward, the young fella, the under 21. His name escapes me right now, but he's still a dangerous forward, and Fitzgerald picked him up. So it's funny that they'll still give him a man marking job. Other interesting matchups: Ryan Johnson and Kieran Malloy.
Yes,
that's a beautiful matchup, isn't it?
Yeah.
I do like that matchup, and I think that matchup will probably happen. The Daryl Branigan conundrum for Cara Finn, that's a big conundrum for them, because this is a dangerous player, and Cara Finn picks 6 forwards. Like, Sice, you would say, is arguably their traditional worker, but Sice is not at an age profile where he wants or probably have the pace to follow Daryl Branigan. So what do? Put Lundy on him? See, Lundy will work, and Lundy drops back maybe a bit, sometimes too much. So maybe Lundy, he would have the speed for him.
But this is where I was actually thinking about Liam Silk again. I was wondering, would Kieran Fitzgerald, would he be able to pick up Laverty? That frees up Silk. Not necessarily to go to wing forward and mark Branigan, maybe, but then frees up maybe Kieran Malloy to push in there and just leave Gary Sice in a freer role.
Right. You're dropping a wing forward or dropping a forward then, are you?
Yeah, well, you're playing more in a... If you can see my hand gestures now, just, you know, just all
well,
around the middle.
We're on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm going to YouTube and just see that I don't know what I'm talking about. But you know, just that middle eight, it's like,
you're like Rafa Benitez, you know.
Because it's a more defensive role playing wing forward against Kilku than it would be playing around the middle.
Yeah, I think we talked about this before. Was it? Oh, it was maybe against Nemo with Tomás O'Shea or something like that. We wondered who would do mark him, and I think they just Cara Finn just played as they were.
Well, I was just about to say that because like this sounds really traditional, but I would say that the Cara Finn management is like, don't you worry about them, let them worry about you. And you see the way the Cara Finn play, they move the ball so quickly that like Kilku are really kind of dependent on getting turnovers and then breaking the pace, but Cara Finn don't allow you to do that because they move the ball so quickly by the foot that they're rarely that out of shape that a team like Kilku that wants to break a pace can do it, because Cara Finn have their men in positions to be able to break it up anyway. So I think that like that's what I, having done it already before against teams with half back lines that break a pace, I think that's what the manager O'Brien will be telling Cara Finn, say Gary Sice, Jason Leonard, whoever will be Farrer on the forward, with Farrer playing centre forward, to let the half back line worry about you as opposed to you worrying about them going down the pitch.
Yeah, no, I think they will as well. I have a feeling I don't think they'd put Silk on him. I don't think they'd move their team around that much, but I think that maybe it is Gary Sice might be the one, just track him when he goes and that's it, or stay goal side of him when they're attacking. That's probably the best way.
Against Nemo, I saw Gary Sice and he was having a great battle with his I can't remember his name, his individual marker, but he drifted in the odd time just to keep him thinking, do you know what I mean, drifted into full forward. It was only a little bit
he does that sometimes.
If he's going to take a break, he goes, listen, I'm not fit to track Daryl Branigan down the pitch because I've bust my balls for 10 minutes. You just go out there to the, you know, to the wing forward line. If you have to trap him back, you have to. Then I'll be back in 10 minutes to do it. You know, I think they're kind of this, the Carfin forwards are so in sync that they can do that, whereas it would be dangerous for any other team.
Yeah, no, they absolutely do. And one thing where Carfin are so dangerous and where Kilcoo need to be careful is this press, and they're all doing the press now. Corrifin's ability to win ball around the middle is without comparison in the club game. They have Steed, who's a monster of a man. They've Dahi Burke, and their ability to win breaks and dive on breaks. And like I was talking to Liam Silk about Nemo Rangers, you would think that they were the underdog. They were just winning that midfield battle. So with this big press up and you're pushing up all over the field, Corrifin will go to these two lads. And if they don't win it, they'll dictate where the break goes. And now you're caught with six of your forwards pressing, and Corrifin move it quickly with a foot pass, and they've got one-on-ones.
Yeah.
It's difficult. It's difficult to drop the players. And another thing, it's difficult to drop your 13 men back, which Kilcoo will do, and after the press, Corrifin will move it so fast that these lads could be chasing shadows up and down the field. Mm. Get back, not in time. Let's get back forward. Let's get back. We're not in time. Here's a score. Right, back in setting. It's not easy against Corrifin. It really isn't. When they're on song and they're moving that ball through the foot, dropping those men back, you know, as the play is progressing, that just doesn't work.
Mm. And then the Crewe Park factor, obviously. So the press last year's All-Ireland final, like Bernard Pollard had just an exhibition of kicking, and it was long kicking,
yeah.
And they were just dragging the other team like into different positions they didn't want to be in. And this is why Burke got free so often as well. It was launching from that platform of a good long kick out.
Yeah, and a big disappointment about this offensive mark without moving it on, and why they extended it to the 45, is that no team outside of Rory Gallagher teams, and maybe Carlo will change outside of Poacher's teams, they're the ones wearing the bootcut jeans. Most teams are dropping 13 back only when the ball reaches there. They're coming back with the ball. So what way to beat that is to move the ball fast through the foot. So that foot passing was coming back into the game naturally. If you want it one-on-one, you have to move it through the foot. You know, there's no better team getting one-on-ones because Corrifin move it down through the foot. And there is that danger that Kilcoo will be wanting to get players back, but they won't be able to slow, unless the answer is to foul Corrifin and just get back. You know what I mean?
Try
and get
back. Done,
it
you know?
Probably yeah. is easier said than done as well. It's not easy for Kilcoo. Definitely not. I suppose we'll have to get predictions on this, lads. Jeez, I cannot see anything. I think Kilcoo will take it to Corrifin. They won't. They'll drive into them. Corrifin won't look like they're the under. You know, the ones up for it. Like Nemo and Dr. Crokes were massively disappointing. It looked like they didn't show up on the day. Kilcoo will show up on the day. They'll get in their faces and they'll make a game out of it. I just can't see how they can stay with Corrifin. Corrifin have too many ways to hurt you.
What was it you said to Liam Silk there? They have their little village community spirit there as well. He didn't get drawn on that one, but I think it will be closer than a lot of Corrifin matches that we've sort of been disappointed by.
I think it'll be like a Slocknail final. I think it won't be a hammering like Nemo and Dr. Crokes, where it's a joke of a final. But I think we'll know pretty much after 20 minutes who's going to win it.
You Corrifin hammered Slocknail as well, did they not?
They won 10 points, because I was just about to say that's what I think it'll be like myself.
Yeah.
Jesus, yeah.
I mean, we say that's not a hammering, but it's still 10 points.
Yeah, I remember just sitting there knowing who'd won the whole game.
Yeah, maybe it was. I'm trying to think of that final. But it wasn't at the annihilation early on that the other two were, was it?
It wasn't over by half time. If I can remember correctly, it's back in 2015, but yeah. I don't know, they won three finals by 37 points against Crokes, Nemo and Slocknail. And, you know, before the game last year, we would have said that Crokes might be, you know, they'd beaten them in recent enough memory, I think, you know, that they might be well fixed, you know, to take on Corrifin. I know Crokes got sent off in the first half, so that kind of affected it. But you would have said the same about the teams that were playing Corrifin in these finals beforehand, that like, oh, I can really see them putting them up to them. And Corrifin are just too good. Like, I really hope I'm wrong for the sake of the contest or the game, but I think it could be, you know, 10 points or around
really,
that large again.
Jerome Johnson was interviewed. He says the All-Ireland final, you'd have watched them and some of the moves they've put together, it's as good as you would have seen in any level of Gaelic football. I think we talked about this last year when Nemo were playing them, and the other team admiring Corrifin. You know what I mean? Because who doesn't? Who bloody doesn't? They're fantastic. And if they win this, it's three in a row. They're the greatest club team. that's played. And I remember those Cross McGlen teams, both the early the 90s, the noughties, and the one then that came back kind of surprisingly, kind of reinvented themselves with Jamie Clark, you know, kind of on the pulling the strings, or and yeah. Oisín just finishing up
2010 direction.
I think it was 11, 12, or 12, 13. They won two in a row, and they won three Ulsters in a row, I think. Were beaten in, I'm not sure who beat them. Anyways, for the three in a row. But that cross, none of those Cross McGlen teams, I think, are as good as the have as good a forward line, as balanced a team, as many ways to hurt you, as good a midfield. I don't know.
Yeah, I just keep thinking, like, every time I get excited about Kilcoo putting it up to them, like, that clip of Lundy's goal just in the semi-final, it just hammers home how much better.
After, like, 20 seconds.
Yeah. And even the first pass from Syce, the depth of it to ignore the first man and go straight into Farragher, I think it was.
Yeah.
His invention, the turn, the execution of it, the finish, like... they're just too good.
If you wanted to be overcritical, you'd say the two on the full forward line didn't communicate and ran the same side.
yeah.
And Lundy went, shit, we're on the same side. I'm going to double back. Yeah. You know, if you wanted to be overly critical, you would say, lads, a bit more communication in there.
But before Farrer even got that ball, I knew he was going to try that ball to Lundy. It was a difficult ball. It was a really ambitious ball, but that's what Carfin do. And it was executed. No, I actually thought Lundy took a few extra steps around the corner.
There's always one.
Do you think that they both went the same side with that plan in mind? I think
possibly.
I think you're overanalyzing it.
I wouldn't put it past them.
I was going to say they did create space by doing that, but I don't know.
Yeah, I would be more on the line that they both ran the same side because they thought Syce was going to put it across there and they weren't communicating. But listen, who am I to say? Who am I to say that they went both the same way for Lundy to use his speed and double back? Yeah. Fantastic if that's it. We must ask them on Monday. I'll try and get one of them on. Right, so are we all going for Cora Finn? They're 2-7 in the bookies, lads. So, like, I mean, I can't see anything outside of that.
Yeah.
Okay, great stuff. Other two games. These are on the following week, lads, funnily enough, the intermediate and junior football, because on Saturday, the intermediate and junior hurling is on in Croke Park. I think it's at 4 and 6. They're being streamed live, and then obviously the two senior games are on Sunday. Hmm. So there's no room for the football.
Yeah, you
used to
have them same
weekend
because obviously the senior ones were separate. So the hurling would be on a Saturday night or a Sunday, and the football, the intermediate and junior, both games would be on either the Saturday night or the Sunday. So now obviously the senior games are on this weekend. So football has to be moved
across. So Mahara Clune versus Connor. Here, you pronounce that for me.
Uterard.
Yeah. Uterard. So Uterard shocked Temple Knowe, lads. This kind of flew under the radar last weekend. Temple Knowe, by all accounts, kind of kicked it away. They were two up at half time and then they kicked four wides, including a really good goal opportunity. So they didn't get any of those scores when they were dominating. Then it's 9-7 and Uterard get a goal. Now it's 1-7-9. They're a point up. And then they push on to get two more points and win it by three. So, like, Temple Knowe completely... You know, you would, from reading match reports, you would say threw it away. Tommy Finnerty, the Uterard manager, has talked about how they looked after themselves over Christmas and New Year. And he says, they're easy to handle. We've turned a corner with this team. I've said before that the culture was a problem. It's no problem now. These guys are men now.
Wow.
I just went, geez, I like the sounds of this Uterard, lads. You know, listen.
Conor, how have you not talked to this guy already?
These messers who've finally grown up now and they're starting to take their football seriously and they're a really good outfit. Like, Mahara Clune are favourites. They beat Mattock Rangers, who are back up to like a solid senior team in Loud for a lot of years, to beat them well in the semi-finals. You'd imagine they must be a really, really good team. We know the players that they have. You'd have to fancy Mahara Clune. I think Uterard potentially might have, you know, beat the favourites and shocked it,
Pete.
And might not do it again. They needed a replay to win their Connacht, or to win their Galway, county final. So I would go for Mahara Clune here. And a little bit of a pity, I reckon. I don't want to be disrespectful to Uterard, but Mahara Clune versus Temple Knowe was the one we all thought was going to be the final. But look, that's not the way it works.
Yeah. And if I know a man from reading his quotes, I think I know Tommy Finnerty now. Yeah, he seems like a good bit of stuff. Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him to maybe cause another shock. But Mara Clune's story is so good, obviously, as well. No pitch to train on all year. And it's, you know, that's sort of a bit of adversity for them. And I think they see themselves as a senior club, so maybe they think like they're way above this level anyway. I'm going to go with Mara Clune just to shade it.
Yeah, same as my only experience, like Outreard, they beat the Neil won Mayo Intermediate and they beat them fairly comfortably. So, and the Neil were pretty good. I have to say that because they beat us on the way to win the championship. So,
what did they beat you by?
Oh, we were terrible that day. I think they beat us by 6 points.
Six, seven points.
Could have been more than that if anyone from the Neil is listening.
Right.
But,
imagine what Outreard would have done.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
And so, then imagine what Mara Clune would do to you.
That's it. But Mara Clune, yeah, as you said, Niall McIntyre was down there lately, wasn't he? Mm. And they have traditionally been a senior club. Tommy Freeman still doing the stuff.
So waiting to hear my hard luck story. So Portlaoise Intermediates were hammered by Rose and Alice, who were hammered by the Kilkenny champions, who got hammered by Mattock Rangers, who got hammered by Mara Clune. Imagine what Mara Clune would have got to Portlaoise.
You almost in an All Ireland final.
Jeez, we're so close, lads. It's a lot to build on when you see the way results. Right, the last one. Are we all going for Mara Clune here, lads? It sounds like
yes,
we are.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Okay, last one is Nagail from Kerry. Very strong favourites, 1-5 against Ratgarogue. Cushionstown.
Yeah.
So they're the Wexford champions who are after having a brilliant run. And you often see a lot of Kerry teams doing well. And this is a broader point here, lads, I wanted to mention to you. And Brian Carroll has mentioned it on the Hurling Show. I'm not sure a lot of the listeners here maybe don't listen to the Hurling Show. I think there's more people listening to both. But the fact that Kerry only have 12 senior teams, right, means that the 13th team in Kerry plays intermediate, whereas Tipperary, for example, in hurling have 24 senior teams, so it's the 25th play intermediate. Mm. So you always see in Kilkenny only have 12 senior teams. So Kilkenny this year have senior finalists, which is understandable, that's no complaints there. They have intermediate and junior, and you often see in the football as well that Kerry will have the intermediate be in the intermediate final and the junior final, and it's not fair. It's not fair that a county's 13th team at intermediate would be playing another team's maybe 17th if there's 16 teams.
Yeah.
That's not fair. And that's one proposal from the fixtures review committee, that every county standardised with 16 senior teams. Because you can't have a situation here where a team that is clearly a better team you often see like the Kerry intermediate champions could hammer Cork. The Cork champions, you're like, how is that happening? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why it's happening.
Another hard luck story. We were beaten in the All Ireland Junior Final by a Kerry team in 2010, I think, Castle
Gregory, really?
After extra time. Yeah, so I'm all for this.
But isn't it true though? Like, because you're not on the same level. Yeah. It has a knock on effect on many. Unless they equalise it up at intermediate by having extra intermediate teams to make junior equal. But intermediate, if you've 12 senior teams, your intermediate teams are going to be really, really bloody strong. And look at Temple Knowe. Now, I know they were shocked by Uterard, but you would imagine Temple Knowe were not an intermediate team. Mm. Do you know?
Yeah, like we went down to Mullinavat, obviously the Kilkenny football team who got to the final. Remember, you almost got to that Leinster final. If you had a
Mullinavat, I said the Kerry Kilkenny champions. Mullinavat, apologies.
Yeah, and like, but I remember talking to them saying, "Jesus, like you beat the Dublin intermediate champions," and they were saying the third tier, like because like Dublin have 16 teams in Senior B, so it's their 33rd best team.
That's it.
That are going into intermediate.
Yeah.
Competing potentially against the 13th best team.
It's the exact same thing. Dublin traditionally had 32 senior teams. So their intermediate champions were going to, now they've split at Senior A, Senior B. So their intermediate, I would imagine, have they ever won an intermediate All Ireland? I doubt it.
Yeah.
Do you know, it does look good on paper, but that's Dublin's Junior A champions playing playing somebody else's intermediate champions. That's the reality of it. So look, in conclusion, the proposal
Nagail are going to win.
No, but Nagail are going to win, and the proposal to have it standardised across every county is just a no-brainer, right? You can't have a situation like that. Are we all going for Nagail?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great stuff. Right, lads, we'll leave it there. We'll come back and we'll preview the hurling with Brian Carroll.
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out, and they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you Free State bastard."
Yeah.
and next thing I hear, you have no fucking jurisdiction up here.
So this is the first ever club senior final between the Kilkenny and the Tipperary champions, Brian. That's a very weird statistic.
Yeah, it's mad. You would think that, you know, obviously the two teams that dominate intercounty hurling would have some way met at club level, but I suppose Kilkenny, it filters down. Their club champions have been knocking on the door year on year, obviously Ballyhale being the main team there, but you know, Tipperary club teams haven't fared as well at All-Ireland level, and you know, Bursley obviously have a strong history themselves, but yeah, it's an amazing statistic that it's coming around. I think they've only met four times across all grades, so like, right. that's crazy.
Why, have you any theory on why Tipperary have underperformed at club level? Like, I mean, it just doesn't make sense, does it?
No, and probably the standout one is Thurles Sarsfields.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
the team that they had there for best part of a decade. And their best chance was an All-Ireland semi-final against Kilcormac-Colotty back in 2012. You know, and they had their eyes on the final. They completely forgot about the semi-final, and Kilcormac-Colotty fully deserved their win that day. So, you know, it's amazing that Thurles, for all the domination of Tipperary, you know, haven't really kicked on. And the stars of the team that they have.
Yeah.
That was probably the other one. And I suppose the other one then probably was Tommy Vara, the great team that they had.
They had a top-class team, yeah.
Top-class team, you know, and they just never pushed on and won an All-Ireland either, you know. Bit of a travesty, really, considering that for both teams, the domination that they had both in Tipperary and in Munster, you know.
Yeah, there's definitely a weird one. I don't know what it is about them. I don't know what it is about their club. And then, of course, we have the Michael Fennelly, Johnny Kelly sideshow, which, yeah, you know, they're both involved in the Offaly setup. It's going to be an interesting one because we're going to talk about tactics and stuff. But, like, I mean, would Johnny Kelly target Michael Fennelly? Or would this be disrespectful to your manager? Because Michael Fennelly loves to hold the middle and get a free role. I'm sure Johnny Kelly won't want to give him that role.
I think he'll be the first person he'll be targeting, being honest. I think it's ruthless at this level. And look, yeah, rightly so. Like, sure, you know, they might be working together with Offaly, but that's where it'll end.
Yeah.
But I think Fennelly will be a place where he'll go and try and expose, you know, so I don't think there'll be any holding back there.
Yeah, we've Dan McCormack coming up on the show in a minute. Just there was one quote from him because he was at a media launch in Croke Park on Tuesday that I went along to. But he was talking about the chilled out atmosphere in the Borrisalee dressing room. And, like, I mean, it makes an awful lot of sense. He said a lot of club hurlers, especially the ones we have, it wouldn't suit them if they were getting worked up and there was too much motivational speeches in the dressing room. It seems to work for us that it's very calm, relaxed and chilled out atmosphere. And we know club level preparation is getting towards inter-county levels, but at the same time, you have to remember that club players don't want to be tortured for a full year. And you know what I mean? I'd say that's probably what he's alluding to.
Oh, definitely. And often you find as well, and I'm sure you found this as well, the warm-ups aren't as extensive at a club level, thankfully. I'm not a great man for the warm-ups myself, but it just seems to be overdone at inter-county level. And thankfully, you go back to your club and it just doesn't seem to be as going on for as long, really.
Yeah.
And you just kind of concentrate on the game a little more. You don't turn up to the game as early as well. You know, often it can get carried away at inter-county level. It can be professional almost for the sake of it. You know, you could be meeting a couple of hours previous for your pre-match meal or at the dressing room an hour and a half for the game.
Yeah,
all this
meetings
sort of stuff.
Meetings.
And whereas at club level, you know, rule of thumb, roughly an hour to 45 minutes beforehand, you know, depending on the importance of the game. You know, and it's that it does lend itself to a more laid back kind of atmosphere,
yeah,
just and even naturally.
It does. And he was talking about, like, them having some farmers on their team, and if somebody arrives to training 20 minutes late, he's not getting balled out of or getting in trouble. It's understood. And I think any manager at club level, anywhere in the country, if you start treating club players like that, you won't last too long with club lads, because club lads don't need that nonsense. Like, you know what I mean? Club managers need to realise that it's just a different way of treating players.
Oh, totally, yeah. And look, I suppose there's a lot more empathy for people and their real life situation and what's going on outside of it, and that it is, like, obviously very important, but it is only a hobby and a sport, and it brings a lot of joy to people. And I suppose Bursley obviously know that firsthand. But I think, you know, the really successful club managers see that and they manage that really well. And look, I've been very, backing of Henry Shefflin, his approach to Ballyhale as well. Like, and just going back in that story last year when, you know, the Kilkenny lads got that bit of a handy holiday, I think, what was it, the Wild Geese tournament, yeah, or whatever it was called down in Australia, and Shefflin let them go and play, yeah, like, you know, and he'd no issue with it and told them, you know, do them good to get a break, and they came back and Fenley shot the lights out, got 3 or 4 goals against Wexford's Navena. So, you know, it just shows how well he managed that situation instead of, you know, losing the plot and telling the boys to cut and go. So just, you know, that to me, good managers at club level understand the players have a hell of a lot else going on, you know, and they do. That's part of it.
They do, and I'm sure Colin Fenley and TJ, I think it was those two, they would have come back going, Jesus, we have to repay him for letting us go there. You know, it just, it works, it will work in your advantage. So Father,
I remember, on that for a second, I remember like when we had Ken Hogan over us as well, and you know, he might be after having a long year with the county, and you might, you know, and said the better half would be looking to go on a holiday or whatever, and you know, you might squeeze in a week, but Ken would always come to you and say, look, you'll be better for that, I'm delighted you're going. Do you know, inside he could have been saying, I can't believe you're going, but you know, he portrayed it to you, this break will do you the world of good, you'll come back way fresher. And you know, you invariably did. Like,
yeah, the best teams I was on were teams that if you lost, your heart would go out to the manager. You'd look at him across the way and say, after everything he's done for us, and the other teams I've been on, it's a terrible thing to say that you'd look across to the manager and you go, well, I wouldn't feel too sorry for that bollocks.
Yeah.
It's the truth, isn't it? Like, you really try harder. You go that extra mile for a manager who's a nice man. Obviously, that's just one quality, but that being a sound man is a huge part of man management, because naturally you're good at that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, definitely. I have to agree with you on that one. We've all been in those restrooms where you're going, I'm nearly glad this year is over.
Yeah,
you
know, that lad will be gone. That lad will be gone. See, yeah, Father O'Neill's now, not Father Manning's, as I like to call him, who's a football club in Longford. They didn't get, their two fellas didn't get off. So Billy Dunn and Mark O'Keefe.
They appealed it again last night and they didn't get through either. So
very disappointed for the two of them. Yeah, though. I hate when stuff like that happens.
Their last gasp now is the DRA if they go to it. So it'll be interesting to see if they go that far. So it is disappointing, you know.
It is. That happened to Piershig, interestingly enough, against Coola, and they missed the Croke Park game and it went to a draw, got them back for the replay and lost it, which was an interesting one. Yeah. So I thought that was a good one. But it is. It's terrible for any club. It's terrible for any players. And from the match reports I saw, was reading, there were sendings off that weren't as clear cut. Now we know no sending off in hurling is clear cut, because there's enough hurling people who will say there's nothing wrong with that, but apparently these ones, they were on the softer side of it.
Yeah, and it tends to be now just that they tend to back the referee's report regardless. You know, common sense seems to go out the window. And that's disappointing. And I know they'll say it opens a minefield and all that sort of stuff, but you know, that's probably the thing that jars or really annoys people, you know, hurling and football people, when common sense seems to go out, you know, just gets thrown out. And, you know, it just seems to be by the book. It's black and white. And that can be really, really frustrating.
Yeah, no, definitely. So like I said, Dan McCormack was in Croke Park on Tuesday and I spoke to him, so you can have a listen to that.
So Dan, how's it going?
Good, all good now, yeah.
It must be nice to get out of Borrisaleigh for a day. I'm sure it's a crazy village.
Definitely, I suppose I'm teaching in Borrisaleigh as well, so there's no escaping any of the excitement or the hype around the village. No matter where you go, shop, butcher, post office, all anybody is talking about is a big game on Sunday. So yeah, there's huge excitement around the village.
Is that difficult, or are you used to that? Do you embrace the chat and have a bit of a chat about it, or some players can think that gets inside their heads, or how do you?
I'm probably boring enough about it. I kind of just give the usual cliched answers and just
even to supporters.
Yeah, even to the old Boris people, you know, don't really tend to go into mad detail about the match, just give the usual cliched answers, please God we do it, and I wouldn't really go into too much detail, no.
Yeah, please God, and just crack a quick joke.
Exactly, and off you go on your way,
Is it different, the build up in Borrisaleigh now before an All Ireland final with Tip, for example?
It probably would be a little bit,
more intense.
It probably is a little bit more intense, and especially if you're kind of wary of some of the younger players or players that wouldn't have experienced this with Tip as well, because although we'd have a good bit of experience within the team, you know, most players probably wouldn't have dealt with the hype, such a big hype, as this kind of a game before. So you would kind of be a little bit conscious that, you know, they could stay away a little bit and kind of hold back a small bit, that probably would be for the best, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm sure yourself, Paddy and Brendan, yeah, having prepared for All-Ireland finals, that, yeah, like, do you talk in team meetings or do you talk to lads on their own?
Yeah, small bit, you know. I think most lads are fairly level-headed about it. They kind of know as well what to do, and we have been in similar enough situations before, especially playing Paddy Gunner in the Munster final. It wouldn't have been the same scale, but again, it would have been a huge game for us in the club. And again, I suppose we're kind of trying to keep into routine and keep doing things the very same as we would have done for the Ballygunner game, as we will do next weekend.
Yeah, true. So you're kind of used to the routine.
Kind of used to it, small, yeah.
It's actually fantastic, the new schedule for the likes of Boris Lee, because you've serious momentum behind you now,
yeah,
don't you? Whereas a 10-week break would have broken that.
It would, definitely, because I've been talking to a few fellas from Tumi Vera who said that they really struggled with the long break. I think on one occasion they kind of stopped training, and the second time they went hard as they could train. And so, with a 5-week, it's fairly doable. We had two challenge matches during that period, and we trained throughout. I think we played Kerry and UL, so it kind of brought us in nicely into about 2 weeks before the St. Thomas's game, and we kind of took it from there, and it seemed to work well for us. Yeah,
because you didn't lose any of that momentum. Like, you were
kept
that same form, didn't
you?
Yeah,
definitely. Still kept the same form. Started the game fairly well as well, so there didn't seem to be too much of a loss of momentum, really, in St. Thomas's game.
Yeah. Can you believe it's the first time Tipperary and Kilkenny champions have ever met each other in the finals? Bizarre stat.
It is, and I suppose, you know, Tipperary clubs really overall have a fairly poor record
championship.
I think Tumi Vera were the last team in the 90s to get to the final, and, you know, Boris Lee were the last team to win it in 1987, so there's a huge gap, and I suppose obviously that's why, you know, Kilkenny and Tipp teams haven't reached there before.
Yeah. So how much do you lean on 87? Because, like, tradition counts for a lot, and, like, I mean, okay, your team has never been there, but Boris Lee have won it.
They have, and you can take great belief and great pride in the fact that, you know, your neighbours and your cousins have won these medals, so it's possible for us to do the same thing. But again, at the same time, it's a different era. It's a different time, and, you know, you don't really get much of a benefit out of it. You know, you are looking there with pride and you are looking with a little bit of belief, but at the same time, you know, we'd probably take more belief in the fact that we did it against the Ballygunner, we did it against St. Thomas and these teams, as opposed to looking back to the 80s with the other team, you know.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Like, I mean, talk to me about your role on the team with Brendan. The whole talk after the Thomas's game, all the interviews, yourself and Brendan and Johnny Kelly as well, we're all talking about your role and Brendan's and how you sneakily mark his man while you leave him off.
Yeah, kind of works like that a small bit. Don't want to give too much away to you now either. But I know, look, if Brendan ever, see, Brendan takes a lot of the freeze up the field as well. He's up there. Sometimes he likes to just drive forward and attack. And I suppose, be it hurling or football, you just don't want to leave a big gap in the middle and to expose your full back line in front to any kind of a nice ball that a corner forward would like. So I just tend to sit back and kind of mop up in behind if he kind of goes up the field or drifts up the field. Because, you know, again, the way that Brendan is playing at the moment, he'll be a marked man and teams will try to drag him around the place as well. So it kind of gives him a little bit of freedom to move up and to attack the game a little bit more as well.
It seems to work really well because, like, I mean, he's your talisman, and if he gets a point, it's nearly worth two for you because
exactly,
he puts the fist up and, you know, it kind of gets you going.
Definitely. It is working well, and it's probably something we've been doing for the last couple of games, and you just don't really want to change your winning form either, you know. It's been working well for us so far.
So even your form has been excellent as well. You're a man of the match in the county final, and, you know, you've been completely yourself and Brendan, like, the big players for Boris Lee have been doing it, and that's the really important thing with a kind of a rural club.
It is, definitely, and, you know, I suppose you kind of you're seen as a leader there, and, you know, you have to play well. You know, there is that little bit of pressure as well, and you want to perform for your club. But again, you know, but overall, you know, our forwards have really been lighting it up as well at times. You know, you look at young James Devaney's after making a great name for himself over the last couple of games, and Kevin Maher as well. But I think the big thing with us is that if somebody isn't doing it on any given day, somebody else steps up. You look at Conor Kenny getting man of the match the last day. Got man of the match in the semi-final against Glen Rovers as well. Hit 6 or 7 points. So that's the trait of a good team, really, is that if somebody isn't doing it, somebody else can do it. And thankfully, that's what's been happening so far.
You mentioned JD there. You must have been panicked last Tuesday. I heard Johnny Kelly was on the warpath with the school.
And there's two of them. Kevin Maher as well.
Kevin Maher, he was the centre-back.
You know, obviously, you'd be a little bit nervous and you'd hope that nothing happens to them because, you know, they're only 18, but they're pivotal members in our team. Yeah. They're hugely important to us. they make up a lot of our scoring threat as well up front. And, you know, obviously the lads had a school's game as well. The Hearty Cup was a very prestigious competition as well, and they were mad to play. So we were just delighted when we heard that. Well, JD, first of all, he got the winning goal.
Yeah.
Secondly, and Kevin had a great game.
He passed it to him.
Exactly. So it worked out well for everybody, thank God.
So when he checked into the WhatsApp group, injury-free, lads.
Injury-free. weren't too concerned about the result, which was injury-free, yeah.
But it's a really difficult one, because I completely understand Johnny saying here, lads, they don't want you to play or whatever, but I completely understand the school wanting them to play. Yeah, you know, yeah. So it's a difficult situation for everyone.
It was, catch 22 for everybody,
yeah. But Jukka, you've come out the right side.
Exactly, so it's all worked out well. And
so that's the main thing.
Yeah.
Come here, you were injured during the league, and I'm wondering, looking back, you're probably sickened at the time with Liam Sheedy, the new manager. You wanted to impress him and all the rest.
Yeah, definitely.
But like, it's working in your advantage now, probably.
It is, definitely. I would have actually missed the last two leagues for injury. 2018, I did cartilage in my knee, missed a full league. Then last year, I did AC joint and missed a full league as well. And I think it was actually the same weekend, very same day, same weekend, same date. So I'll be looking to avoid that game this year if at all possible.
But bad, the AC
bad little look, yeah.
That's a horrible injury for a hurler, I'm sure.
It was, yeah. And there's obviously, you know, there's a huge gap in it as well, even since. I think I was fortunate enough not to have surgery and it healed itself. But again, you'd still be out for 8 to 10 weeks, and took a long time to get back to full fitness, even to take confidence in taking a shoulder, taking a hit. Took a while as well. So again, probably, who knows, it might be of benefit to me now at the moment. Maybe I kind of feel a little bit fresher. And
well, it's a shorter season.
It is definitely a shorter season, and all these small things definitely add up, you know.
Yeah, to definitely. I saw a quote saying that, it was from you, saying that you personally used not win tight games, and now you do. So how has that changed?
I kind of think that all it takes is just about one game.
To win one of them.
And it kind of happened for us this year. We played Drummond Inch, who would be massive rivals, and we won the game by 2 points. Going on from that, then we won the next game by 1 point with 14 men, and that was really the game that kind of got us going against Killer One in the semi-final. And then up until the last game against St Thomas's, which we won by 7, which wasn't really a 7 point win.
I thought it was.
I think so.
Yeah,
I don't know, even the goal at the end. Yeah, but that was the first game that we won all year by more than 3 points.
Right.
So again, you know, we were really struggling for the last number of years, even to get over a quarter final stage at Tipperary. And we had some excellent teams with some excellent players, but we just couldn't get over the line.
Right.
But again, there seems to be that little bit of belief, a little bit of resilience that we mightn't have had before. And I think just one little click, just one thing to go right, kind of instills that belief into
the
team.
And I'm sure you hammered it home then in training and said, look, we do win games
definitely,
like that.
Definitely, because it can become a little bit
a thing,
that, you know, there's a little bit of pressure here. And you can't, if it happens a couple of times, you kind of start to question yourself, well, if it comes out the last 5 minutes and it's a draw game, what's going to happen here? But I think that's well and truly out of our system now at this stage, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. Come here, has your girlfriend and Brendan's girlfriends, have they forgiven you for the team holiday yet?
Or? I don't know. Well, we got New York out of it, all right. We got 3 nights in New York.
Okay, that was the first leg of it, what?
That was the first leg, and they saw the rest of the girls packing up for Cancun and we were packing up for Bursalee. So
they not have gone without you, no?
They could have had if they wanted to, but I don't know whether they really want to.
Yeah.
But look, hopefully we'll go again and we mightn't be back here again for, look, took 33 years to get back here for Bursalee. So
well, that's the thing. But the thing,
more important things than holidays, you know.
Though there is, but that's for you. People always forget about partners, girlfriends, wives, all these kind of things, that this is no commitment to you. Because you love it, it's your passion. It might not be hers, you know what I mean? So it's actually a bigger commitment for the partners.
Yeah,
you know?
It is, definitely. But I suppose, again, at the same time, they know how much it means to people like myself and Brendan, and they're fully supportive, and we're lucky that they're so supportive of us. And again, they enjoy the nights out as well. There's been some great celebrations in Bursalee.
Yeah.
How much it means to the whole parish, it's even hard to put into words. The couple of nights we've had after the county final and the Munster final, and just everybody in Bursalee is on a high, and it's probably more than a game of hurling, really, you know. You see the outpouring of emotion, tears, and, you know, all the things that you've often seen throughout club teams in Ireland, and, you know, it probably is, it means an awful lot more than an actual hurling match or a hurling victory, you know.
Yeah, no, it does. Has Brendan dedicated the half hurl to the club, or is that going to be put into a
I don't think he could find it actually after the game. He threw it out over his shoulder.
Really?
Yeah,
that would look good in the clubhouse,
brilliant.
Wouldn't it?
Look brilliant for a museum or something, but as far as I know, he hasn't got it back since anyway.
Right, okay. Come here, just to finish up, we know Ballyhale are obviously a brilliant team.
Yeah.
Like, they're the Curragh Finn I was talking to them out there, and that's what you're up against.
It is.
I suppose coming up here, making sure nerves don't get the better of the younger lads. lads and just performing.
Exactly. That's really the key focus on training all week, is just to perform. You really just don't want to have any regrets. You know, a game like this could just pass you by if you weren't fully focused and fully tuned in. So what we're really focused on is just to perform to the best of our ability and see where it takes us. And, you know, we've been in situations like this before, against going in as underdogs against Ballygunner, going in as underdogs against St. Thomas's. And, you know, we firmly believe that if we perform to the best of our ability, we'll be there thereabouts on Sunday.
Yeah, I know you do some video work before a game, but I'm sure last year's final, like with Ballyhale and St. Thomas's, that might be, I'm sure not watching that is probably better than watching it,
wouldn't
it?
Possibly is, yeah. You know, there's different days that certain teams just hit click in their prime, you know, and, you know, could be better off. Yeah, but again, like, you know, like every team, you know, there's different things that you can work on, different areas. But again, you really just want to perform yourself. Like, if you spend too much time focusing on Ballyhale, you might be losing a couple of percent that you should be putting into your own performance. And, you know, that's what we'll be doing for the next couple of days. Obviously, we've done a little bit of homework on them, where they're strong and, you know, how to deal with those situations. But again, usually in the lead up to a game, it's just totally focused on what you're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. Well, come here, Dan. Best of luck.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
Yeah, good stuff from Dan there. And he wasn't giving too much away, Brian, about, you know, the way he switches with Brendan Maher, and he didn't want to get too much into it other than the fact that he drops back. But it will be interesting this weekend, because that whole dynamic of Brendan Maher attacking and being their inspirational leader and Dan maybe dropping back on his man, that won't really apply as much, you'd imagine, this weekend, because TJ Reid will be on Brendan Maher, and TJ Reid isn't going to be stupid enough to let Brendan Maher go. He will have the legs to stay with Brendan Maher whenever he attacks, and I'd imagine TJ Reid will give him enough to worry about at the other end that Brendan Maher might not be able to go forward. So that's probably the standout. It's the obvious one, but it still is tactically the standout matchup of the game.
Definitely. But that's even if it goes ahead, because, you know, Ballyhale have the ability and have the tendency to switch up their forward line, particularly their half forward line. You know, the three players, Adrian Mullen, Brian Cody and TJ, they can play in any of the three positions. So you just don't know what Sheffield's going to bring from that perspective. But they will be trying to nullify Brendan Maher. And we spoke about this before. Brendan Maher, if he scores a point, it just seems to be, it's so lifting and raising towards the Burst Lee cause, that it's like two or three scores almost, you know. So it Ballyhale really need to be kind of mindful of that, and they'll try and shut down that avenue, I think, as best as possible.
I think that's, now, but I think, would TJ not be the best man to do that though, Brian? Because, like, I mean, number one, Brendan Maher might not be as inclined to let him go. We know Dan McCormack will drop back, but TJ loves tracking back and working and working hard. He seems like the perfect way. He has those fitness levels, you know, to be able to do that.
No, I agree with you. And look, he's been man marked all the time, but he some of the matches lately, he's definitely been really selfless, and he's put in the hard shift, and, you know, maybe been the provider and worked hard, as opposed to being on the scoring chart. So, you know, I fully appreciate your point, and I think his ability to hook and block and win dirty ball is phenomenal. So, you know, obviously that's one of Brendan Maher's huge strengths as well. So, you know, it's a real interesting battle. There will be other interesting ones as well. You know, I like the look of, you know, maybe Darren Mullen, Mark and JD. I think that's going to be really interesting. Two young men as well on the top of their game. Two speedy little guys, probably in a two-man full forward line too. So
do you think
that can be a real battle?
I don't know. I was thinking that they might do something smart and put JD on Michael Fennelly. Just really kind of rattle it and go, listen, I don't want you dropping into midfield. I want you buzzing around that and making sure he comes after you. Now, obviously, we're talking about this. The defenders dictate who marks who. It's not really the forwards, you know. So obviously, Boris Ali might see TJ on Brendan Maher, and they might have somebody else planned to follow TJ everywhere, and then Brendan Maher still gets the free roll. You know, it's a lot harder on a forward to decide who you're marking, I suppose. Yeah,
you know, you might be looking at two. You know, if Boris Lee withdraw Kevin Maher, which they tend to do, and leave Jerry Kelly and JD inside.
Yeah,
you know, Ballyhale decide who marks who. You know, they might try and put, say, JD and Joey Holden, but it just won't happen from that perspective. You know, we've all been on teams where you're trying to exploit maybe what you would perceive as the weaker link of the two and get a mismatch. But generally, it's very hard to actually get that off unless the opposition are completely asleep. But that won't be happening on Sunday, that's for sure.
Well, then you'd end, if the forward tries to dictate it, you end up with a situation like Lara Corbett and Tommy Walsh in the All-Ireland final. It just doesn't work. So, like, I mean, obviously, Paddy Staples Hamilton and Colin Fennelly is a huge one as well. Do you think Paddy line up against him? Like definitely, he has the experience definitely for it. I would worry about Paddy's physicality. Look, you worry with everyone's physicality on Colin Fennelly. Do you think Paddy can stand him up?
Yeah, Paddy's very strong in the air. He's way stronger than people give him credit for now, being honest. He's a brilliant man to actually catch the ball himself, even for a small man. He comes over the top of you. You know, you go back over his match with Tipperary, he's plucked some fair balls out of the sky, and he knows how to play a man. That's probably one of his big strengths. If you actually go back to the county final, he was probably very, very lucky. He completely took one of the Kildangan players out of a ball, a high ball into the square, and played the ball straight through. It went out wide, harmlessly wide in the end. But, you know, he's very astute. He's obviously very, very intelligent hurler. Probably doesn't have the pace that he had once upon a time, but, you know, that won't overly bother him in terms of Colin Fennelly. But, you know, Paddy's very experienced. I think that's a hell of a battle too. But look, we've seen time and time again when Fennelly gets that ball in the hand, he can be next to impossible to stop. That's where the likes of Dan McCormick comes in very, very importantly, where they get numbers back and try and, you know, help out Paddy Seplin from that perspective.
Well, that's the thing. And Dan is a big, strong man. Like, Dan could probably hold Colin Fennelly up. He'd be pretty strong. Fella. So who do you see them putting on Michael Fennelly then, if you think Johnny Kelly is going to potentially target him?
You see, it's hard to know. Will they try Conor Kenny? You know, he's playing really well. I know he's playing out in the wing and he's popping 3 and 4 points a game as well. So he also has a lot of legs too. So he can go through. Kevin Maher is even another option. You know, as opposed to JD doing it. You know, Kevin Maher could play that role a lot more fluidly because they leave JD inside and Kevin can burst through the centre. We've seen that against St. Thomas's, took a couple of great scores. And one which Bursley Lee would have loved was the blocking down, you know, blocking them down, putting the ball straight back over the bar. So Kevin Maher maybe could play that centre forward role. But, in fairness to Bursley, they're not afraid to mix it up.
No.
You know, and they have a good few options.
The important thing is that when you have a half forward line that's going to drop, you're playing into Michael Fennelly's hands, basically. You know what I mean? And I don't want to pick out Michael Fennelly especially. We know how brilliant he has been, but I don't think his mobility is what it used to be. And I'm sure Michael Fennelly's like, when his man drops into midfield, he's like, ah, lovely. Now I'll just get on ball, I'll drop back, I'll double up, I'll spray a few nice passes in. And I'd say he can't believe his luck. But other teams generally drop players back because Ballyhale are so good. So it's a difficult one. You're brave if you keep your half forward line kind of in position.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see as well, because Ballyhale didn't play, say, a sixth defender last time. You know, they played a third midfielder with their spare man, because remember Sloch Neill set up with a sweeper at the other end, you know, similar to what Bursley are going to do. So
it'll
be interesting to see what Ballyhale will do this time. You know, will they play the seventh defender, or will someone else go into centre back and Fennelly stays?
So where does Fennelly play against where did Fennelly play?
He held just the centre back. You know, they only played with five defenders. They kind of, more or less, you know, he still holds the centre. He hurls on the 45
anyway, right?
Anyway, you know, he naturally does that. You know, but they basically trusted the two inside. They trusted Darren Mullen and Joey Holden.
Okay.
You know, so look, they're two fair corner fullbacks to be trusting inside, and they've great pace, and they're both strong in the air. So it'll be just interesting what Ballyhale do with that extra player, because the last day they left Ronan Corcoran in the middle of the field, and that caused a lot of problems for Sloch Neill. You know,
yeah. So, like, I mean, Shefflin tactically is kind of proven himself here, isn't he? Because
that was the one thing that struck me the last day. He gets a lot of credit, obviously, for being manager, and he's obviously managing the players really well. But I really saw that tactical nous that the last day. I thought that was really impressive.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And too often the spare man is just left back. And we know that. We've talked about that, I'm sure, on the show before, that when a team has a player sent off, that instead of using your spare man as an attacking spare man, every team uses him as defending, as a sweeper. So the other, the team who has had a man sent off never has to change anything. They just go, right, it's going exactly the way it was. We just play with an now we have to deal with a sweeper. Whereas instead of, if you use your spare man in an attacking one, the team with 40 men now have to take off a forward and bring on a back, and they have to do all sorts of things.
You often find, right, with teams that are not used to setting up with a sweeper, because it's a totally different mindset as a back.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, we've seen Waterford probably the masters of it there for a few years with Tadhg De Borca, and, you know, Wexford obviously at the moment. The six normal backs, like they have to mark their man and mark their man only. Almost forget about the ball, you know, just maybe break the ball so that it allows the sweeper to come in and sweep up the ball. And that's a totally different mindset. You know, you don't take a chance on a ball going front or whatever. It's totally different. And if you're not used to that kind of way of hurling, it can upset you. And I think that's what Ballyhale did the last day, is that they said, look, our five defenders know how to hurl and they'll continue to hurl, and they backed them basically to go man on man with their players. So I think that's what I have to give huge credit to Henry Shefflin for in the Ballyhale defence.
Yeah, no, definitely. A stat on Boris Ali, which I thought was incredible, is that they've had no injuries from the Tipperary quarter final. It's not unreal on a run like that, quarter final, semi final, final, and then two games. They beat the Cork champions. Two games in Munster. Five games, yeah. Not one injury. The same starting 15.
Would you believe we actually did the exact same with Cooleri when we got to Club All Ireland ourselves? We went straight from the county quarter final right through to All Ireland final, and we never changed our team once. So I actually found that interesting when I heard Dan McCormack talking about that. You know, the fact that we've had the same 15. I was like, you know, in small rural areas, that, you know, that can tend to be the way you might be drawn on one, maybe two subs, and that's no disrespect to the guys that make up the panel, because yeah, they're so important. But you know, we're talking about real high end hurling here. You know, it is hard to go beyond that 17 or 18 player. But yeah, and you also need that run of luck. You do need all your best players on the field if you're going to get on a run like that, because you just don't have the same, maybe, you know, spread of players that, you know, maybe the top clubs or we call the super clubs that they actually have.
Yeah, exactly. There's other matchups like Evan Shefflin and Richie Reid, the two wing backs. Them against those two lads against the two Kennys potentially will be two great matchups as well. It's a match I'm really looking forward to. I think Boris Ali can give Ballyhale plenty of it, and I do think the Tipperary Kilkenny rivalry will come into it. I think Boris Ali's tradition in having won it means that they won't be, you know, that will give them some
natural confidence
that they have, and apparently in Tipperary they're not short of confidence traditionally as well. So like, I mean, I think this will be a really good final. The bookies have Ballyhale 1-3 and Boris Ali nearly 3-1 outsiders. Like, I mean, you'd want to be probably crazy to back against Ballyhale, but I think we'll definitely get a better final than we did last year. Well, that wouldn't be hard, but I think we'll get a good close game. What do you think, Brian, or what's your prediction on it?
No, I agree, because Boris Ali in their nature, you know, it's tight games. You know, they make it really difficult under opposition. Like, apart from the St. Thomas's game, I think 3 points was their biggest win from that county quarterfinal stage. So generally, they're in tight games. They have the belief that they can win tight games. And really, they'd only won that last game. JD's goal put them, I think, 6 up, and then Brendan Maher got that point at the end to win by 7. So, you know what I mean? It was kind of like, it was a tight game for the vast majority of that as well. Yeah. So,
even though they were the better team,
the better team. But at the same time, I still, looking back at that game again, because I watched it back, St. Thomas has missed some criminal shots straight in front of the goal. You know, 4 or 5 from play tear your hair out. I have to point that I don't understand. Obviously, it's their own choice, but you know, to me, Conor Cooney should have been on that freeze. You know, Dara Burke, even his style of hitting the freeze the last day, he drives the ball, he absolutely opens his shoulders and drives it, and that doesn't lend itself to a really consistent free taker. It's great when it's working, but you know, he missed the 65, he actually missed the ball stopper, and generally you don't see free takers missing by that distance, you know, to hit the ball so wide. It's really kind of it might skin the post or whatever, or a foot or two wide, but you don't tend to hit the ball that wide. So, you know, that's just his style of hitting the freeze. And to me, I think if Thomas had taken, to me, what were routine chances, you know, remember Ballyhale, Tidery won't miss those, you know, and their forwards that they have won't miss points from straight in front of the goal, because they're not afraid of the big occasion, you know.
Yeah. So what, you fancy Ballyhale strongly?
Not strongly. I think I agree with all your sentiments. I think it's going to be a hell of a battle, but I just think Ballyhale might have too much on this particular occasion, you know.
All right, okay. So the other one then, these two games are on Saturday, the intermediate and the junior. So Tullerone are 1-2 against Father O'Neill's, and I'd say that's probably a reflection on the two injuries feeding into that. I wouldn't think Tullerone are 1-2 favourites over the Cork champions if they had a full complement, would they?
No, I don't know. I'd say it would have been a lot closer. You'd have been talking 5-6, 6-5, I think, you know. you know, with those two sending offs, and unless there's something happens at the, with if they go to the DRA on Friday evening, you know, it looks like they won't be playing. So they're a massive loss. And we talk about that. It's a massive loss to any club.
Yeah.
You know, two guaranteed starters and two big players for them.
Two forwards.
Has the capability of shooting lights out, in fairness to him. But, you know, Tullerone, they have Tommy Walsh, the cousin of the Tommy Walsh. You know, he's full back, but they also have the opportunity to put back maybe Park if he's really going to town as well. So, you know, Martin Walsh can play centre back as well or wing back. So they've a lot of options there, I think, Tullerone. You know, they've real strength and depth at the moment.
Yeah, no, they definitely do. Pádraic Walsh was at that media day the other day as well. I thought he had an interesting comment. He says, "The thing I'm loving about this championship, you're coming up against teams you don't know anything about. It's like being a young lad again, trying to suss out who you're on and the way they play." And I just kind of made me smile when I read it, that even at club level, senior club level, you'll generally know the lad that will be marking you, because the same lads would come across on you, you know, against the usual clubs, and you know what you're dealing with them. And then I was thinking back, how long ago would it be when you marked someone when you actually had no idea what they were good at and having to figure them out, during the game?
It's like a practice match almost.
You
go play someone from another county and don't know what you're letting yourself in.
You race them out for a couple of balls and you go, "Jesus, this lad's pretty fast. I better stop doing that." And then you start trying to make sideways runs, and you know what I mean? Whereas if you knew him, you would have yourself kind of the way you're going to approach him kind of figured out before you go out.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I think it sums up the Walshes in general. We often hear Tommy come out with great quotes like that as well. It's just their overall enthusiasm for the game and their love of hurling, I think. So, and they're honest to a fault, aren't they, really? It's really heartwarming to actually hear that sort of stuff.
It is, and it was a classic talking about their honesty. They were talking about, he was asked about Tommy and the father, Mickey, hugging after the county final. So the other three sons are slagging the father off. "Why didn't you come near us? Why was it Tommy that you were hugging?" And the father, the golden boy. Like, I know exactly why he did. Like, imagine being the other three brothers when Tommy was like the greatest wing back, you know, of his generation. Yeah. I'd say they didn't even get a look in, But anyways, he says, the father says, "You were too far away." He said he was closest to Tommy. It's just natural the way it happened. So that was the way. That's the way it was. So it would be funny listening to that kind of crack going on around their dinner table. So who you fancy here? It's hard to look past Tullerone then, right? Even if the two lads get off the night before an All-Ireland final for club lads, like Dear McConnelly's got off late and he didn't play well the next day. Like, for an inter-county fella who would be county players who would be mentally stronger than club players, I'm sure for a club player to go through all that and then just find out the night before, they couldn't be right anyways, right?
And it's hard on the team, because, you know, what did they do? Announce the team, hold off announcing the team on the day of the match.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's really messed up their whole preparations for the whole week. You know, that kind of way it takes.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to manage that, you know, because it's on the tip of everyone's tongue. Are they playing? Are they not playing? You know, and obviously, if it does go to the array, that'll be their third meeting in 5 days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was actually the 2015 All-Ireland final against Kerry. Alan Brogan was told by Jim Gavin that he was starting against Kerry because Dear McConnelly had been going to the DRA the week leading up to it, and Alan Brogan was told about 2 hours before, I think it was 2 hours before the game, that you're not starting now, and Dearmas.
Oh my God.
So that would, you know what I mean? It was mad.
Yeah, it's mad.
Anyways, right, we'll go with Tullerone in that one, and the last one then is Russell Rovers. This is Cork versus Kilkenny again in the junior. Russell Rovers are favourites against Conaghy Shamrocks, 8-11, 11-8. I suppose a toss up here, Brian.
Yeah, look, you know, Russell Rovers and amazingly their neighbours in East Cork of Father O'Neill's as well, so they will have a big contingent up from the kind of the one area, and they'll be getting behind them, so even that can help itself as well. You know, Conaghy Shamrocks isn't too far away from Tullerone either, so you know, Russell Rovers, they've a couple of, you know, really good forwards. You know, Brian Hartnett obviously is the main guy that everyone might know about. His brother Kevin used to play for Cork. You know, so Kevin's actually retired. He's living over in Austin at the moment. So, and then excuse my pronunciation, but you know, they've a big plus, and I think it's Michael Bassang or however you pronounce it. He's back for the final as well. He missed out in the semi final. He's their normal free taker. So you know, having two big forwards like that is a big, big thing when you're talking in a junior club All Ireland. These games tend to be actual crackers a lot of times. They seem to be very evenly matched in most of these games. I think this really shows the joy of club hurling. I think that people can go out at junior and intermediate, and it's not all about, you know, just the senior setups. I think when, you know, it should be a great weekend, really, to be fair.
They have their own standalone games and they're being streamed on YouTube as well. I'm pretty sure both of them are on Saturday evening. They're on at 4 and 6 on Saturday, and I think the football ones are on the following Saturday, so it'll be interesting to have a look at them. I'll be interested in watching Tullerone, Father O'Neill's, definitely, anyways, no disrespect to the other one. So who are you going for? Stop sitting on the fence here. Who are you going for in this last one? Are you going for Cork, is it, Kenny?
I'm going to go for Cork in this one.
Russell Rovers.
We'll give
them
one. Yeah, Russell Rovers, yeah.
All right.
Just
okay.
their forwards. I think their forwards can have the ability to, you know, put up big scores.
All right, great stuff, Brian. That's all we've time for. We'll be back on Monday and we'll review all the finals then. Talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I won't see you.